was a lie, though. I could fool Maddie, and even my husband, but Rue had shattered my ability to lie to me. She'd unfolded all the hidden spots inside me, then dredged me from the bottom up. I knew there was another person. At midnight, I reached over to my bedside table and got my phone. To my left, Davis was a sloped hill under the duvet, anonymous as landscape. I kept my eyes on the brightness of the screen and navigated to Tig Sims's number. It took me a moment to find it. He'd added himself to my contacts as Restoration Garage. That gave me a pang. Tig had guessed that I would want to camouflage him, and he'd been right. If I had any business texting him, there would be no reason for a misleading name. So I shouldn't. I knew it. I texted anyway, just to see if he would answer. Shave and a haircut? Tig was still a night owl. Less than 10 seconds later, he answered with an emoji that looked like a quarter. 2 bits. I smiled in the dark. Then he sent, "Did you get her?" "Not yet," I texted. "You will," he sent back, and it heartened me. 2 simple words, but I needed someone to give them to me. Another text dropped. "Can I help?" "No, I got this, thanks." The lie came instantly. I sent it before I could consider, before I could process the relief and hope that flooded me at the very thought of not being alone in this. My fingers hovered on the screen, though. Where did my simple human weakness stop, landing me on the far side of betrayal? I was looking for the line. I wasn't sure exactly where it was, but it felt close, too close for comfort. I closed the window before I could change my answer. I felt another text land, but I didn't look. I navigated to settings and turned off vibrations, then put the phone face down on my bedside table. I had no business asking Tig to do Davis's rightful job, especially since I hadn't given Davis the chance. He might, if only I asked him. And it wasn't my husband's fault that I was a coward and a liar. I tried to tell myself that this tiny call and response with Tig meant nothing, but I knew better. It had mattered, because not 10 minutes later I fell deeply asleep, wrapped warmly in Tig's faith in me. I woke up with a new plan, fully formed. Rue arrived 2 minutes after Davis left, letting herself in Charlotte style. She must have been watching the house, waiting for his car to leave. I wondered how long she'd been out there. She was wearing jeans and a linen shirt, casual and easy-fitting. Maybe she'd dressed for squatting in my neighbor's bushes with binoculars, making sure I didn't go creeping out at 4 a.m. again. The day went much like the one before, with Rue watching me go through the motions of my regular life. Luca arrived just before 11, though, unlike his mother, he still used the doorbell. "I finished the next section," he said, waving the textbook at me, and then went galloping to the keeping room to put the DVD in. Scuba knocked him out of his cool kid saunter, turning him into the kind of boy I could see hanging out with Maddie. I had no idea what Rue had told him about her sudden need to supervise his class up close and personal, but his attitude toward me hadn't changed at all. Either he still didn't know I was Rue's client, or he was a better actor than even his mother. I made grilled cheese and tomato soup for lunch. I skipped it, and the hunger at my center was both punishment and power. Only a few days in, but my jeans felt looser. I was using up the last of my baby weight to feed the baby. I hoped to God I could finish this, get myself back into a routine with food before I lost my milk. Rue declined a sandwich, and after poking around in my fridge, she decided to run home and get a green juice. The second my front door closed behind her, I stopped spooning baby food peas into Oliver, scattering some Cheerios on his tray to keep him busy. Luca was eating at the breakfast bar, studying at the same time. I leaned on the counter, trying to look casual, but Rue would be back in 5 minutes. I hadn't been alone with him yet today. This moment might not be repeated, and I wanted to get him talking. Rue had said multiple times that she was, or had been, married. Luca would certainly know about that. I'm excited to get you in the actual ocean tomorrow. You're gonna love it. I sounded like a perky idiot. Thanks to my job and to raising Maddie, I knew a lot of teenagers, but I interacted with them either as an instructor or a parental unit. I had no idea how to get a criminal's child to yammer about his mom, much less about what she was running from. Yeah, he said, glancing up, but then he went right back to studying. I tried to get Davis into it, but it isn't his thing. I persevered until he looked up at me again. He's claustrophobic, he says. How anyone can feel claustrophobic in the middle of an enormous, wide-open ocean, I have no idea, but it's a real thing, apparently. That is weird, Luca said, but his eyes strayed to the book. He was too well-mannered to keep blatantly reading with me standing right there talking to him, but his intentions, his desire, were both plain to see. I worried about this kid. I couldn't help it, given his mother. I wondered if he was as deceitful and practiced as she was, but whenever I was around him, I could not believe it. This man-child was so transparent, his gaze flicking to the book again, his hand moving restless on the open pages. Rue was languorous and unhurried, every move as orchestrated as a yoga pose. Stillness and deliberate motion masked her reactions. I was the same, and getting better at it. Last night it proved that. But Luca? He was a kid, trying to be cool but prone to visible spasms of emotion. You're lucky your mom already dives. You'll have a lot of opportunities to get out there, huh? He nodded. Does your dad dive, too? I was watching him intently, so I caught the way his body froze. Just for a second, but it was a telling second. No, he said, and that was all. That's a shame, I pressed. Maybe you could get him into it. His face flushed, soft red coming into his cheeks, and then he jerked one shoulder up in a shrug. I don't see my dad. He looked so unhappy, and I felt a crushing shame. But at the same time, my spine tingled. I was onto something. I'm sorry, I said. And I wasn't sure what I was apologizing for. Are your parents divorced? Luca swallowed. His gaze was direct and sincere. Ms. Wei, my dad, he's not a good person. I don't talk about him, like, ever. Sure, I'm sorry, I said, backing off. Given Rue's occupation, I'd thought the odds were she was running from a warrant. But now, I wondered if Luca's father was a more likely reason for her to have hit the road. Not a good person could mean a lot of things. I had more questions, but I let him go back to his studying and his sandwich. I genuinely didn't want to hurt the kid. Also, the piece of me that was playing didn't want to tip my hand. Rue would return any minute, and she'd notice if Luca was distressed. Both these reasons existed, but I hoped my gentler, kinder motivation was stronger than the manipulative stir I felt down in my deeps. I was innocently feeding Oliver again when Rue let herself back in. Luca was engrossed in his book, his thick, perfectly shaped eyebrows furrowed. At 2:30, Maddie slammed the front door wide and came stomping down the hall. She threw open the swinging door. Monster! Luca! Pull a clock! Hush, two more pages, Luca said. She blew him a raspberry, which made Oliver start blowing raspberries back. I was on the floor with him, helping him bang around the wooden pieces of his My First Puzzle. Hurry up already! Maddie slid onto the stool beside Luca, her shoulder touching his, peering down at the book, even though she knew it backward and forward. Rue, silent on my sofa, watched Maddie almost as intently as I watched Luca. Both of us mothers were clocking how he reacted to her touch. The answer was, not at all. Maddie might as well have been a piece of furniture. But Rue's eyebrows knit together, uncontrolled, as if she had forgotten she owned eyebrows for a moment. I'd thought it might be different with boys, this worry over their crushes. Apparently, it wasn't. Luca had a heart, unlike his mother. She was out to guard it. Maddie, not getting any of his attention, climbed off the stool and dropped to her knees on the carpet by me. She hurled her arms around my neck and gave my cheek a resounding smack. The sound made Oliver laugh so hard she did it three more times, then Zerberted his own cheek while he grabbed big handfuls of her curls and yanked joyfully, crowing. Mad smiled up at me. "How much longer? God, I've missed diving. We haven't gone much since Oliver. I mean, I love him and all." She touched the tip of his nose and told him, "I love you, fat potato," before turning her eyes back to mine. "But I miss us, doing our thing, you know?" From the corner, I could feel Rue's eyes on us still. "I do know," I said. Davis and Maddie were blood, and Davis and I were married. Maddie and I, we were divers, and I hadn't realized that as bad as we'd been missing getting under, we had also both been missing the thing that made the two of us a pair. I ruffled her curls. "I'm sorry, kiddo. I've been lost in baby clouds. But I promise, once we get through this, you and I will start diving on the regular again." "Get through what?" Maddie asked, and I shook my head a little, laughing. "Just, you know, the class," I said. "You're a good monster," Maddie said, and I felt my eyes prick with tears. "Done," Luca said, smacking the book shut. "Good. You can take the DVD home and watch the last section tonight. We'll do the test in the morning, right before your first open water dive, okay?" I told him, so conscious of being watched. "Mads, go get on your swimsuit. Luca, you too." "Want me to jog fat potato baby down to Ms. Fenton?" she asked, poking Oliver's belly to make him laugh. "We'll drop him on the way. Run, get changed." Luca's swimsuit was hanging up with his wetsuit in the downstairs guest bath. He went in as Maddie went bounding upstairs. The rest of the equipment was already loaded in the Subaru, ready to be driven down to Tate's. I flipped through Luca's book, making sure he'd done the practice quizzes. I did not look at Rue. I kept still, so my body wouldn't telegraph anything. It was time to put the plan I'd woken up with into action. If today was like yesterday, if she went to the gym. But she stayed on the sofa. "She really loves you," Rue said. "Of course she does," I said, surprised out of my pretend. Rue's eyes narrowed. "It doesn't always work that way. Not with steps." "Not always," I said, wondering if a bad step was the reason she was running. While she was in a talking mood, I asked, "Is your husband Luca's step?" She ignored that. "She isn't jealous of you. Adolescent girls don't like women macking on their fathers." "There's a little bit of that, but Davis and I make sure not to exclude her." I didn't want to talk with Rue about Maddie, but if I did, maybe she'd talk back. Several times now, I'd seen the woman who lived inside her constructs and characters. I'd seen enough to believe her when she said she liked me, in her way. I hadn't yet given up on using that. "I work on it. Davis and I both do. We even planned our honeymoon around Mads." "Huh," Rue said, a skeptical breath of sound, but it was true. I said, "We did a destination wedding, just the three of us in Key West. She stood up with both of us. We called her the best mad and the mad of honor." "No church?" Rue asked, surprised. "You smell like church to me. No big white dress?" I shook my head. It was the second time for both of us. I wore a sundress. We stayed a week, and Mads and I went diving every morning while Davis slept in and then read or golfed. Then would all three go hang out at the beach or Mallory Square. One afternoon, I said I needed a nap, and I sent Mads and Davis to the Hemingway home. Mads wanted to see all those cats with extra toes. I did too, but more than that, I wanted her to know that even on our honeymoon, she and her father would have their own space. Rue was leaning in, interested. It made me want to say more. I could feel her doing it, and this was part of her job. She got people talking, listened for the cracks and damaged pieces that hinted at their secrets. I talked anyway, hoping she might talk back, tell me something real in exchange, even if it was only to bait me. What about you? How did Luca manage when you got married? I got married long before I had Luca, she said, which still didn't mean the mystery husband was Luca's father. Not definitively. There had been any number of lawyers post-vows. After a moment, she added in a grudging tone, She's a nice enough kid, your step. But I wonder what you're doing here. I didn't understand the question. In Pensacola? I'd come here looking for Tig, she knew that. No, here. She waved her hand around at my keeping room. In this brick front shithole with Mr. Elbow Patches, raising his Tweety baby and a girl who's nice enough but not even yours, baking whole chickens, having quiet, don't wake the baby, sex every Thursday at 9 p.m. I bet you're in the PT fucking A, and how can you stand it? You're like me, Amy. I see you all the way down. We're the same, except you had advantages I didn't. You were born with a silver spoon jammed up your ass. How the hell did you land here? You could be anyone. I was affronted, but I worked hard not to let her see it, because this was interesting. She was off kilter, her words flowing so fast she couldn't be thinking them through. I fixed her with a challenging stare. I was remembering Tate's careful outfit, her scrubbed clean home, all prepared for Rue, and Rue's disdain for Tate's need to show her up. Did Rue feel that I was actual competition? There was a measure of respect in her words, but maybe this was just another way to work me. I tested it. You're so right. Why am I here when I could be on the run from the law? Stealing cars, squatting in the Sprite house, smelling mildew, with my poor kid jerked out of school and away from everything he knows. Oh, what was I thinking? It was a solid hit. I saw the flinch, though it was nothing more than a reset of her shoulders. You've never seen my real life, she said. This is a hiccup. Come Monday, I'll have the means to start my real life over. Trust me, my real life isn't this small, she said, waving a hand at the walls around us. I looked at her with something that was almost pity, then down at Oliver. He was lying on his back, tired out, his little fists wrapping my index fingers. I bobbled his hands back and forth. It isn't small here, I told her. Your eyes are no good. If my life was shit, why would I fight for it this hard? You can't send me to jail, Rue. Tig fixed that. All you can do is mess up this tiny, tiny life you think is nothing. But I'm willing to pay almost a quarter mil to keep it. What I have is valuable and fine, but you can't see that. You're too damn broken. It was probably the most honest thing I'd ever said to her. I wasn't looking at her, but I thought it landed. I could feel it in the air between us. When I finally did look, she had shaped her face into something insouciant, pitying. But under that, I believed I had shivered her. I saw a haunting buried in the back of her eyes. Maddie came bounding down the stairs then, lithe and young and lovely in her bathing suit, a voluminous sheer cover-up billowing around her. Rue got up just as Luca came back from the bathroom. Maddie was a dawdler, but I'd wondered what had taken him so long, and now I saw he had already struggled into his borrowed Aqualung wetsuit, still damp from yesterday. It was a little short, a slice of bare ankle showing at the bottom, but this time of year the water was still warm enough for it not to matter. "Gym time," Rue said, though she was still in her street clothes. I didn't breathe a sigh of relief. I didn't react at all. She paused to drop a cool kiss on her boy's cheek on the way. "Have fun, be good," she told him. "Always," he said. She saw herself out. "You could have waited until we got to the pool. That can't be comfortable," I said to Luca. "I know," he said, sheepish, pulling at the wrist. He did look good in it. Behind Luca, I could see his jeans and t-shirt in a crumpled heap on the bathroom rug. Typical teen boy, thank God. Here was my chance. I said to Maddie, "Let me run to the restroom and we can go. Watch the baby." I stepped into the guest bath. Once the door was closed, I leaned down and picked up Luca's wadded clothes. I folded the t-shirt neatly and set it on the counter. Then I picked up the jeans and ran my hands around the pockets. He had a wallet in the back one. I took it out and flipped it open. A crisp 20 in the money pocket. No credit card, no insurance card, but a Maryland driver's license. I didn't know enough about that state to know how real it looked. It couldn't be real, though, because the name on it was Luca Rue. I put it back and checked the front pockets. I found Luca's keyring. It was a lightweight metal bull's face, goofy and cartoonish, probably something from a meme I was too old to get or care about. A single key dangled from the ring in the bull's nose. No car key, so Rue hadn't given him free access to the purring red monster she'd jacked from Boyce, which either represented a little bit of responsible parenting or she had control issues. I slipped the bull in my pocket, then stacked all of Luca's clothes except his t-shirt neatly by the sink. I flushed the toilet for cover and took the t-shirt out with me. "Hey, kids, I have bad news. I just realized we're short a couple of air tanks." "Oh, man," Maddie said. "I can't go. I mean, I know it's just the pool, but..." "We don't even have enough for me. I was counting on the nitrox upstairs, but I burned that on the morning dive I did the other day. It's no big deal. I'll run pick up some more. Can you keep Oliver? You and Luca can watch the last video." I handed Luca his t-shirt. "Take the wetsuit off so you don't swelter. I'll be gone half an hour, 45 minutes, tops."
"Sure," Mad said.
She reached one easy hand out to the back of Luca's suit, pulling the drawstring to undo his zipper. Her eyes lingered on the bare skin of his back. "And Mads, let Luca pay attention to the video, okay? You watch the baby," I said.
"I will,"
she said, too offhand for my liking. "He needs to know this stuff so he can dive safely," I told her, stern. I didn't like leaving them alone. Not with the way she looked at him, and all the ways he did not look at her. I didn't want her doing things that would mean the world to her and be nothing more than opportunity and hormones for him. He was a nice kid, but he was still a teenager. Mad was grinning.
"You're so mommy sometimes."
"I'll take that as a compliment," I said. Oliver was yawning, but I hoped his nap would hold off until I returned. He'd make a pretty good chaperone. Since Oliver's arrival, Davis and I had learned firsthand how excellent babies were at preventing or at least interrupting sex. Luca had struggled the rest of the way out of the wetsuit, and Mad's eyes slid sideways at his bare chest, lean and pale and smoothly muscled. He was oblivious, pulling his t-shirt on over his swimming trunks, but it didn't set my mind wholly at ease. I'd stolen glances at Tig just like that 1,000 times without him ever noticing, until the night he did. I went out through the garage, even though I wasn't going to take my car. They were already chattering, wrapped up in the idea of the dive and each other. I checked my watch. Rue had left a good 20 minutes ago. By now, she would have had time to change and leave. She was usually at the gym until after 5, or at least that was when Luca headed home. I slipped out the garage's side door, quick and quiet. I had less than an hour to break in and seek out Rue's real and secret name. There was power in it, or she wouldn't keep it hidden. I was going to find it. I would find it, even if I had to level the Sprite House to the ground. 14. On my way to Rue's, I passed Tate's good friend, Lavanda, out walking her big collie mix. We exchanged cool hellos. Inside, my stomach felt sour and hot, almost boiling. But long before I saw her, I was walking easy, hands swinging as if I hadn't a care in the world. I didn't even have to manufacture a smile for her. I had one ready-made, waiting for whoever needed it. She went right on by, though Lavanda could smell drama or distress from 50 paces. She lived for it, in fact, but she hadn't smelled it coming off me. I was getting better and better at this. I had always been good at it. My body had lied for me for years now, making itself regular and relaxed with Char. I'd even taught it to lie to me. The only difference was, now I understood what I was doing. I wasn't sure that was a good thing. I didn't see anyone outside when I got to the cul-de-sac, and the red car was gone. I let myself in with Luca's key. Here was the same den with its sad rental furniture. The Picasso still leaned on the mantel. The laptop sat open on the coffee table, but the screen was dark. Rue had claimed that it held only Luca's games and schoolwork, but Rue lied. It might be chock full of her secrets. I didn't have the password, though, so I ignored it. There was already too much house and too little time. I had to think like Rue, then search smart instead of thorough. I had seen criminals on television hide things inside toilet tanks, under area rugs, between mattresses and box springs. I'd seen multiple movies where the bad guys in cheap hotels unscrewed the vents and hid fat wads of money or drugs or guns behind them. I'd seen that trick so much that my guess was Rue would never use it. "Think, Amy," I said aloud. The house was Char's, only backward, which meant I knew it intimately. I knew that the door in the foyer that looked like it would open on a coat closet was actually hiding the ill-placed furnace. I knew there was a small hatch up to the attic in the hallway outside the master. But these were places I might choose to hide things. I needed to think like Rue, not me. I made myself stop and breathe. I had to pick a place and start. If it were me, I would want my secrets near me while I slept. It felt safer. Rue wasn't all that interested in being safe, but she dripped sex and talked about it as if it were a craft. The bedroom was her power center. I went to it. It was carpeted in a fuzzy shag so old that the color had become unnameable, something between sludge and old oatmeal. There was a matchy-matchy pecan bedroom set, straight out of the 80s, with large, round bulbs on the legs of the dresser and the posts on the queen-size bed. The bed itself was a mess, 5 or 6 pillows tossed about, and the sheets frothed up like a heap of meringue. Either Rue was a restless sleeper, or she'd had company. I touched the pile of bedding. It had not come with the house. The sheets in the duvet looked and felt like something from a 5-star hotel. I searched the dresser first. I doubted Rue would hide things in her panty drawer like a 13-year-old girl with a hot pink diary, but she might tape something to the undersides of the drawers or behind them. I checked every hidden surface, especially behind the mirror, a very Rue-like spot. I could imagine her here, preening and primping, knowing that as she looked at herself, she was also looking at her secrets. Nothing. The master had two long, shallow closets, side by side, taking up an entire wall. All four louvered folding doors were cocked askew. The one closer to me held dive gear, all of it high-end. In the other, a row of her beautiful dresses hung beside a shelving unit filled with folded items, the fabrics all expensive and the tailoring exquisite. Rummaging through her clothes felt weirdly intimate. She had searched me, and now it was as if I were searching her back, running my hands over the shape of her body. She had a lot of shoes, heel sandals, flats, booties, and buttery soft leather. They stood in a tidy triple row, filling the floor entirely, but they yielded nothing when I knelt and jammed my hands into them. There was a bedside table on the far side under the window. It held a single, shallow drawer. I opened it, releasing the scent of patchouli and almond oil, and saw a box of condoms, a pale blue vibrator shaped like a large caliber bullet, and a row of lubrication and massage oils. To use on lawyers, I thought bitterly. Behind all this was a vape kit and some boxed cartridges, each containing a different kind of pot. If I were looking for her power center, here it was. And yet I found nothing taped to the bottom or behind this drawer either. I closed it a little too hard, frustrated, and at the exact same time, I heard the unmistakable sound of another door opening. The front door. The sound of footsteps, light and rapid, were already coming down the hall toward me. I hadn't heard the purring of that sleek red car. I had almost no warning. I dropped flat onto the filthy carpet behind the bed and rolled under. I ended on my back, staring wide-eyed up at Rue's box springs. My breath sounded so loud. I forced myself to slow down, pulling air silently through my nose. I was sharing the space with still more shoes. Another row was lined up just under the side of the bed that was closer to the door. Three pairs of athletic shoes and a couple pairs of ballet-style house slippers. Between the sneakers, I saw Rue's feet in elegant sandals framed by the hem of her jeans walk into the room. I kept my breath even, hoping my pounding heart was audible only in my ears. What was she doing here? These were her gem hours. The feet came directly toward me to the far edge of the bed. She kicked off the sandals, and I heard the soft thump of what must be her purse landing on the bed. Then I heard a zipper. The jeans dropped around her ankles. She stepped out, and her hand came down and picked them up. Dear God, was the gem a euphemism? Maybe she'd sent Luca to my house so she could open up her sex drawer and work over some hapless, too-chatty lawyer. Something damp was under my left shoulder. Moisture was now seeping through the fabric of my lightweight summer sweater, a slimy, coin-shaped wetness. My skin wanted to crawl off my body and put itself directly into bleach. If she were meeting a man here, there was no way I could stay in whatever this little wet spot was, the box springs scraping my nose as Rue banged secrets out of some puffy old banker's freckled hide. When her cell phone started to ring, I almost screamed over the cheery electronic jangling, so startling was the ringtone in the quiet room. "Hello," Rue said. A brief pause, and then, in a bored voice, she said, "Never on the phone." Silence. She must have hung up, just as she had when she'd said those words to me. At least the call wasn't some man checking to see if Luca was gone yet so he could come over. It was a poor soul who was caught in her web, like me. Maybe someone I knew. I hoped not Tate. If Tate was paying her, I would have my answer about Philip. I almost wished Rue had taken the call, so I would finally know. As if my wish had power, the phone began jangling again. Rue ignored it. She got up, bed creaking, and walked away. The phone kept on ringing away above me on the bed, her feet disappeared from my sight. I could hear her rustling around near the dresser. I'd checked those drawers. They were full of her gym clothes. Finally, the ringing stopped. I found myself staring at the pair of athletic shoes closest to my face. They were bright blue, and the soles had an odd, stacked look to them. Some kind of fancy support system? They were Balenciaga. I could see the designer's name running sideways above the edge of the sole. Her running shoes probably cost more than our mortgage payment, yet right now, she was walking her bare feet across this filthy carpet. We could both be getting all kinds of diseases from it. I could feel the disc of wetness like a crawling on my shoulder, as if it were made entirely out of live bacteria. The rental dust bunnies tickled my nose. The ringing started again. It had to be Tate. Who else could be so pushy and persistent? The third ring cut off in the middle. Oh, for Christ's sake, Panda, just pay the rent, Rue said, but with little rancor. Her voice was coming from the foot of the bed. Panda? It had to be Panda Greer. Rue couldn't possibly know another. She said something to Rue so agitated that I could faintly hear her. I couldn't make out the words, though. It sounded like a distraught duck, quacking. Okay, 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 Rue said, sounding bored more than anything, repeating it until the quacking stopped. I can't meet you. You've made me late for the gym already. This upset the duck even more, but it was a relief to me. No lawyer was currently inbound. Rue would pull on yoga pants and leave. I could finish my search. Get the hell out. Fine, I'm putting you on speaker, though, so I can dress. I heard a soft thump as the tossed phone landed back on the bed. Are you alone? Panda Greer asked. Yep, Rue called back. The shirt she'd been wearing landed on the floor. I'm not recording this, Panda said. I believe you, Rue said. She wasn't as careful with Panda as she was with me. Maybe because Panda didn't sound like she was playing. She sounded weepy and earnest. I'm not going to say anything I shouldn't say, okay? So please do not hang up. I just have to make something clear, Panda said. Rue came back to the bed again, picking up the phone, I thought. Can you make it clear while I pee? I'm late, and your special lady has already filled my quota for bullshit this week. I practically had to blow her just to borrow her low-rent pool. Tate is not... Don't be gross! Don't... Panda sputtered, sounding near tears. The furious kind. I got that. Rue could be so enraging. At the same time, I couldn't help but notice that Rue didn't talk to Panda like she talked to me. For Panda, there was no avidity, no interest. She could have been talking to the pest control guy. I felt a sour curl of something, almost pleasure. I had more money than Panda, but I didn't think that was the only reason. The respect that Rue showed me felt too grudging to be faked. I was also relieved to hear that Tate had been her usual pain-in-the-ass self about the pool. Rue must not have any serious leverage. She'd had to ask Tate for a straight-up favor. Either Philip was faithful, or Rue had been too busy blackmailing Panda and me to dig into the story Tate had told about the kiss. The bathroom door shut, leaving me alone with whatever kind of lice this carpet had. I found myself staring once again at the blue sneakers. I felt drawn to them for some reason. I could hardly look away. Then it clicked together in my head with a snap so audible I was surprised Rue didn't hear it. I hadn't seen anything like sneakers in the closet, and Rue was going to the gym. When she got out of the bathroom, she would bend down to pick out a pair, and there we would be, eye to eye. The toilet flushed. I rolled out from under as fast as I could and went scrambling on all fours across the room into the closet with the dive gear.
I slipped past her BCD and some hanging wetsuits of varied thicknesses, stepping over a mesh gear bag to wedge myself into the corner. I could see through the slats as Rue came padding back out of the bathroom, naked except for a tiny pair of silky panties, carrying the phone. Panda was still talking, and Rue put her back on speaker in mid-sentence so she could set the phone down on the dresser.
"My husband is not gay," Panda said.
Her voice was a vehement whisper. "Sure," Rue said, in that enraging way she had. I stood quiet in the closet, blinking. A thousand things about Panda and her marriage made a thousand kinds of instant sense.
"He finished the program," Panda said, shrill and insistent. "We both did."
"Sure, and those programs super, super work," Rue said, earnest to the point of parody. Too many things were happening. My shoulder still felt wet. I brushed at it, and when I did, my fingers touched something that made me jump. A used condom that had been stuck to my back plopped softly to the floor. I almost screamed. I felt my gorge rising. I swallowed hard, easing away from it, disgusted inside and out. I was sharing space with a used condom, and I now knew things about Panda that I did not want to know. Things that made me sad and so very sorry for her. I needed everything to stop so I could bathe in bleach and have a quiet nervous breakdown. But Panda was still talking.
"I'm not gay. We have children."
"Mm-hmm. I forgot that God strikes gay people barren. Or maybe it's that they spontaneously combust in hellfire if they try to breed, whatever your church says." It was true that Francis and Panda went to a very conservative church. They had both been raised in it. Now, in a minute's worth of eavesdropping, Panda and her way too lovely husband made an awful kind of sense. I felt so sad for both of them, and even angrier with Rue. Just one pair of shoes in the other closet was worth more than the rent on this place, but she was tearing Panda up over it. If the stakes in my own game had not been so very, very high, I don't know what I might have done in that moment.
"My only sin right now is how deep and wide I hate you," Panda said. "You do not understand anything about me or my marriage."
"Okay, well, then go pay my rent for no reason," Rue said. She'd set the phone down on the dresser, and she was stepping topless into yoga pants. "I'm going to check the website in 2 minutes, and if I see I'm paid up, you can go in peace to enjoy thinking about Tate while you make sweet, sweet love to your not-gay husband's toothbrush. If not..." I could feel my entire body shaking. I was so angry with Rue. I saw Panda's whole life as a picture, captured in this single moment. She hadn't befriended Tate to propitiate her like a sex volcano god. Panda was in love with her. What an awful thing, to be so love-starved and to settle for so little. She and Francis were caught up together in a lifelong lie, and Rue had threatened to tell her very straight-laced family, maybe her church. Or maybe Rue had only threatened to tell Tate. That would do it, because now that I knew, it was obvious that Panda had hung her heart on the meager peg of Tate Benasco's shallow friendship.
"I'm paying it now," Panda said. "Although how I'm going to buy groceries this month, I have no idea."
I wondered then if Panda didn't like me because she saw herself in me. I was excessively close with Char for my own reasons, but maybe to Panda, my fierce protection of Charlotte acted as a mirror, and Panda didn't want to look too deeply at herself. That I understood. "Here, I'll make it up to you," Rue said. She was holding a sports bra, but she traded it for the phone. She pointed it at herself, but too low for a selfie, throwing her shoulders back and tightening the muscles in her toned abdomen. I heard the whir of the phone's camera, and then she tapped at the screen. Check your texts. She waited a few seconds until we both heard Panda's shocked gasp. Then she said, "Hey, straight girl, are mine as nice as Tate's?" More silence. Panda had closed the connection. Rue chuckled, shaking her head, then tucked her phone into her purse. I watched, seething as she put on the bra top. She did bend down and dig out a pair of the shoes that had been right by my face not 5 minutes ago. She carried them away, moving out of the room and down the hall at a fast clip. The breath all came out of me, and I felt like half my bones had turned to air and leaked out with it. I was shaking with exhaustion, but I couldn't relax. Not yet. She'd said that she was going to check the website. I eased down the hallway, quiet as I could, my back plastered against the wall. She was in the den. I could hear her clacking at the keys. I checked my watch. I had half an hour, tops, before the DVD was over and the kids started wondering where I was. So far, the only secrets I had learned were Panda's. Panda must have done as she was told, though, because Rue didn't call her back. She made a soft, satisfied sound and stood up. A minute later, she walked right past me, unseeing, and went out the door. I ran to the computer, even as she was locking up on the porch. I had to, before it could go dark again. I hoped to God that Rue hadn't forgotten her gym pass or a bottled water. If she came back now, I would have no time to hide. On the monitor, I saw mostly games, but there was also MS Paint, a calculator, Office. I navigated through the doc files and found that there was literally one saved docx on the whole computer, labeled Civics Paper. Either the computer was as brand spanking new as it looked, or Rue was letting Luca slack on homeschooling. I opened it and scanned a few paragraphs. It was about the judicial branch, and it read like it had been stolen directly off Wikipedia. The mom in me reacted, wondering if Rue knew how to check with those anti-plagiarism sites. And then I blinked and shook my head, almost laughing at myself. This was Rue, amoral as a feral cat. She'd just as likely be teaching her kid how to cheat better so he could beat those programs when he went to college. This really did seem to be Luca's computer, though I knew from my eavesdropping that Rue at least used it to surf the internet. Time was leaking away, but I took another precious minute to check the browser history. Like every parent with a teenager, I knew how. I found Airbnb, of course, should just check the Sprite House listing. Before that, Rue had been Googling tropical places, reading up on countries with good coastlines, low cost of living, and no extradition treaties. She'd bookmarked 7 sites with information about the Maldives. My heart jumped. I was right. She was running from the law. She must be. Some client or another had been braver than I was and pressed charges. There was a warrant somewhere, probably with serious time attached. I needed her real name, and I would have her. But where would she keep such a thing? I scrubbed at my eyes. They felt sandy with exhaustion. She must have a safe deposit box, or she had simply outbought me. She'd said I was like her, but I couldn't guess her hiding place. Well, I was new at this, and she'd been playing her games for years. Her whole life was nothing but games. Other people were nothing more than playing pieces. As soon as I thought it, I knew. I knew exactly where I would find what I needed. I knew it as sure as if Rue herself had leaned in close and whispered it into my ear. I got up and went to the shelves by the fireplace. A few books rested there, grocery store bodice rippers and thrillers, the covers tattered from many hands. Perfect vacation reading, they were standard fare for rental houses. 2 shelves under that, on the very bottom, another rental house staple, a stack of board games. I knelt down beside them. The fat, square Yahtzee box sat on top of longer, narrow boxes that held Scrabble and Clue and Monopoly. And there, between them, the one I wanted. The game that had to be Rue's favorite. Risk. I lifted Yahtzee with one hand to slide Risk out, but it felt way too heavy. I set Risk aside and pulled the Yahtzee box into my lap. A weighty object slid and thunked as I shifted it. I opened it, and my heart stuttered. No dice cups, no score pads. The only thing in the box was a snub-nosed revolver. Thick, black, oiled to a dull sheen. The name Ruger ran vertically down its short barrel. A box of bullets snuggled in beside it. It wasn't just for show. I reached for it, wanting to see if it was loaded, then pulled my hand back. I shouldn't touch it. I had no idea how or even if Rue had ever used it, but I didn't want any trace of me, a fingerprint, a cell, a hair, clinging to it. And anyway, I already knew that the chambers would be full. I felt it as an instinct. She would keep it locked and loaded, oiled and ready. Rue played for keeps. It was a simple machine, and it had no safety that I could see. I vaguely remembered knowing that most revolvers didn't have them. That was like her, too, though it seemed insane to put nothing but a flimsy cardboard box between a 16-year-old boy and a gun. Jesus, but I wanted out of here. I wanted to go home, scrub and scrub my hands, peel my sweater off and burn it, and stand under a boiling shower. Then I would abdicate. I was in over my head. Rue had a gun. She must have a reason. That reason might be stashed in another of these boxes. I didn't want to know, and yet I had to know. I had to know to win Rue's game, and I wanted to win now for more than me. For Panda, who was still caught in it, and for every other person she was twisting and wringing, I wanted to win all the way. To keep my secrets, keep my money, make her crawl away. I couldn't leave with that Risk box right there in front of me. I opened the lid. The first thing I saw was the money. Two neat thick bundles of $20 bills in bands. More bands littered the box, broken. If this was all her cash reserve, she was running close to empty. The other half of the box's contents was both more jumbled and more eclectic. I saw a stack of passports and grabbed the first one, flipped it open. Rue smiled out at me from the picture. The name was Ange Renault, just as she'd told Tig. Was that her real name? I checked the birth date, did quick math. If this was her actual ID, then Rue was 37. I flipped the next one open, and there was a red-haired, unsmiling Rue with the name Angela Lowry. This was the least romantic of all her names, but I knew it wasn't real because the birth date made her 28. I heard myself whispering out loud, "Bitch, please." There were still two more, and these both looked brand spanking new. I flipped them open and found a blonde Rue with the name Angelica Rue, 34, and a matching one for Luca. In this shot, he was blonde, too. The dye job or the wig washed him out and made him look somehow younger, like a sad, pale rabbit. I got my phone out and quickly took pictures of the box itself, the money, and multiple passports. And then one of each passport opened to the first page. I would Google the names and birth dates and addresses later. I turned my attention to a dark green box, the hinged kind with a velvet outside. Inside, a fat diamond tennis bracelet jingled against engagement rings, at least four of them, and a pair of sapphire earrings. I took a picture of these things, too. Finally, there was a big manila envelope stuffed full of papers and photos. I dumped it out and sifted through it, taking pictures with my phone as I went. There were two birth certificates on top, both issued from Terre Haute, Indiana, that matched the Rue passports. I shuffled past them and found more birth certificates matched to her other passports. There was a stack of driver's licenses, too, all from different states, Indiana, Maryland, Texas. There was a handwritten letter. It was nearly illegible, but I pieced the first few sentences together. They were so racy that they made me blush. Sentimental value? The mystery husband? Perhaps she loved him. Or did she keep it because it was devoted to talking about how beautiful her body was? Perhaps the author was married, and this was simple leverage. I flipped it over, but it wasn't signed. Next, I emptied out a smaller envelope and found a little stack of Polaroids. I flinched involuntarily. The top one showed me Rue, but not a Rue I'd ever seen. Both her eyes were blackened, swollen, the left one near shut. More bruises ran down her perfect cheekbone to her jaw on that side, and violet handprints ringed her neck. Her lips were split at one corner, crusted in blood. Looking at these pictures changed the context of the gun somehow. She stared at the camera with her slits for eyes, her face expressionless. The other five were much the same, showing that whoever had gotten to her hadn't stopped with the face. There was a profile shot and then body shots. Her abdomen and ribs bloomed with navy and purple bruises, dark as pansies. I flipped the top Polaroid over and found writing on the back. Just two letters, N-E. I flipped them all. Each had two or three letters on the back, and when I dealt them out in order, they spelled words in all capitals. Never forget. I wasn't sure if these pictures or the letter said more about her mysterious marriage. Maybe both, maybe neither. She'd been surprised by how much I loved Maddie. Had she and Luca had a bad experience with Steps? Or this might be the work of Luca's father. He's not a good person, Luca had said. I don't talk about him, like, ever. It was hard to tell Rue's age in these pictures. She was so badly beaten. How long ago had this happened? Was this the thing she was running from? If so, I would have to move forward very carefully because of Luca. What would a man who could do this to a woman, even one as duplicitous as Rue, do to a teenage boy? What had he done already? I still hoped an open warrant, not a man, had sent her hurtling down highways until she landed with Tig Sims. But now a man seemed much more likely. Worse, it could be both. If I sent her to jail, would Luca be returned to the man who'd done this? Luca didn't seem like a boy who'd been beaten, but wasn't that how domestic abuse worked? Everyone hid it. I only knew the face that Luca showed me. Maddie might know more, though. I checked my watch. I was nearly out of time. I started putting everything back, but on impulse, I pocketed one of the Polaroids, the first one with N-E written on the back. It was Rue, facing the camera, recognizable even through the bruising. A record of her face could come in handy, and I wasn't likely to get another. She was camera shy, Ticket said. His own picture of her was distant and blurry. I didn't take it only to be practical, though. Part of me wanted a record of this, proof that she was vulnerable, proof that she didn't always win her games. I put everything else back exactly as I'd found it. I was at the front door, ready to go home, when I realized what I'd almost done. We were going diving tomorrow. Rue would bring her gear. I ran back to the master, stopping by the bathroom for a wad of toilet paper. I went to the closet and fished out the condom. It was right beside her gear bag. Gagging, I hurried back to the bed and flung it under. Then I flushed the toilet paper and got out of there. As soon as I was home, I slipped my shoes off, not wanting the kids to hear me coming through the front door. They weren't in the keeping room, though. They must have decided to watch the video downstairs, taking Oliver with them. He would be asleep by now. I went to the guest bathroom and slipped Lucas' keys back into his jeans, then dropped by the laundry room to change my top. I wanted a shower, but there was no time. I headed for the basement. The door was closed, a minor no-no, but I eased it open and listened. The cheery sounds of the instructional video drifted up the stairs. The kids had the volume up to 11. They wouldn't have noticed if I had tap danced in. I'd seen the DVD approximately 7,000 times, so I knew that it was nearly over. I'd come home just in time. I headed down to check on the baby. I was still in my bare feet, quiet against the wooden stairs. I could see the kids on the sofa. Oliver flopped in his bounce chair, sleeping. Luca sat on the end of the couch closer to the stairs, his back to me, facing the TV screen where a pretty girl in a wetsuit was giving the wrap-up speech. Maddie wasn't watching. Something was not right with her. She was lying down, one bare foot hanging off the sofa, braced hard and tense against the floor. Her other bare foot rested in Luca's lap, in what looked like a girlfriend pose to me. Her hands were thrown over her head, as abandoned as Oliver in his deepest sleeps, and her head was propped on a throw pillow against the sofa's other arm. Her face was tipped back, and her eyes were closed, but too tight for her to be sleeping. Her eyebrows were knit up, and her cheeks were very pink. A strange little smile played over her face. It was not an expression I had ever seen before. It took me a moment to understand what I was seeing. I even opened my mouth to call her name to ask if she was all right. But then I realized Luca's arm was stretched out, running parallel to the tensed leg in his lap. His right hand disappeared up under the skirt of her pool cover-up. I froze for the endless half-second it took for me to make sense of what was happening. Luca himself was completely dressed, his other hand innocently resting along the top of the sofa. Maddie gasped, her head tipping back farther and her little smile widening. It broke my paralysis. I found myself retreating up the stairs rapidly, silently, unsure what to do, but very sure I did not want Maddie to know that I'd seen this. If they had been making out, I would have slipped upstairs and then started banging noisily around, giving them a minute so Luca could wipe away Mad's strawberry lip gloss and she could straighten her hair. But this? I did not know what the hell to do with this. Luca watching TV, and yet his hand had been busy, moving between her legs. What the hell was that? It felt clinical and weird and not appropriate. They were definitely rounding third base, but they hadn't been kissing. Her cover-up was still on all the way, and I'd seen the strap of her tankini top, so that was on too. What teenagers go straight to third base? None I had ever heard of, especially not with the girl on the receiving end. I had read all the warning articles about Maddie's generation, how the boys were hooked on porn, expecting girls to service them. I'd read that girls Maddie's age were under constant pressure to send naked selfies and to give out hand jobs like they were no more serious than goodnight kisses. I didn't want that for my Mads. Neither did Davis. We had both talked with her frankly about sex and self-respect, telling her she didn't owe any boy alive that kind of favor. But I had never thought to warn her about this. I wasn't even sure what the hell this was, but I was sure that Davis wouldn't like it. I was even more sure it could not be healthy. "Hey, kids, I'm home!" I yelled down the stairs, trying to sound cheery and not as if my eyes had just been burned out of my head. There was a pause, a very short one. "Okay," Mad called up. I was still low.